You're listening to Framework, where we dig into the research, planning, and building that goes into bringing products to market. I'm Rob Hayes.
And I'm Tom Creighton. And today we're talking with Alec Levin, co-founder of UX Research TO, about what it takes to plan and run a conference. Alec, can you give us a short intro about yourself and what UX Research TO is all about for those who aren't familiar with it?
Hey, sure. Thanks for having me. It's fun to chat with you guys. UX Research Toronto, now we're kind of calling ourselves UX Research Collective, but basically we're a small group of people who are really interested in the development and growth of UX research as a practice, as a community. And so about a couple of years ago, myself and a few other people co-founded this group, and we started putting on meetups. We put on our first conference about a year and a bit ago. And then we've also put on like workshop series and hangouts and just other stuff like that to, again, trying to like connect the dots in the research community and help everybody like sort of share new ideas and challenge themselves and that kind of thing.
So how long into the existence of the UX Research Collective was it until the idea for a conference came to life?
In like any meaningful sense, like probably about, say, seven or eight months. It's something that I had been like personally noodling on for a while because like I feel like in order to sort of put Toronto on the map, like we would really want to have a conference. I feel like and considering there weren't any significant research conferences elsewhere in North America, it just seemed like something that we should aspire to do one day. But I mean, it really came about like in December of, I guess, a year and a bit ago. And we're like, we actually have a chance to maybe do this like right now. And so with some constraints in mind, we were like, let's give it a shot sort of thing.
So what need did you see within the UX research community and specifically in Toronto or even just the broader tech community that wasn't being met by those meetups or those events that you were running? Why a conference?
So first of all, like a lot, especially in Toronto, there's a lot of people who are researchers or who are performing the research function at their company that are on like teams of one. And it's very challenging to be in that position because you don't really have a place that you can go for feedback. You don't really have any mentorship. I remember when I was in this position, like I had no idea if I was like doing things the right way, and I was reading poorly written Medium articles to try and get some sort of like idea or critique on myself, sort of thing like that, how I was approaching research projects. And so the ultimately like the real need that we saw was there's just not really a space right now for researchers to like spend time together, to share ideas, to connect. And so like that's really where the idea of the meetups, which is how we kind of started, came about. And then in terms of like the conference, they're just, if you try and look up research conferences, there really aren't a lot. There's a couple small ones in North America. There's a reasonably large one in Europe, or I think maybe two. There's one in Australia, and that's like it. And when you combine that with like design, there's like more design conferences in the month of March than there are research conferences all year. And that's really too bad because, research is at a really interesting phase of its existence. It's still being developed. Like the whole concept of modern UX research is changing very rapidly. You know, 10 years ago, there was like a usability testing function and that's about it. And research is moving more and more from a more pragmatic level to a more strategic level where now we're influencing product strategy and we're driving business strategy, hopefully. That's, I think, where we're going to try and end up being. And so we need a place to facilitate these conversations.
And so that's the need that you're seeing in the community. As the, you know, as one of the team members running the UXR collective, the organization itself, does a conference kind of address a need for you? Is there something internally as an organization that you feel running a conference helps you guys accomplish?
I mean, it certainly helps with like awareness, you know, especially when you're kind of the only game in town. It was something that, you know, on a personal level, I think each of the co-organizers, myself, Maggie, Tammy, Stefan, and Danielle, like it was something that was really challenging that we really wanted to take on as a group. So it's like kind of that personal level, but you know, it also kind of helps. We try and run a lot of things that are let's say, break even. That's kind of what we aspire for. With all our meetups, we don't make like any money on those. We're not trying to make any money on those. So we have like one chance every year to sort of fund activities for the rest of the year for things that we can afford to not make any money or lose a lot of money on. A good example would be the workshop series that Maggie put together, which was basically like 10-week program on like how to be able to go from not being able to run a UX research project to being able to like fully run a UX research project on your own. And like, you know, we charged about $100 for this like 10-week program. It was like once a week in the evenings. Rob, you spoke at one of them. And that was like an example of something that we were able to do only because, you know, we had a little bit of money left over from last year's conference.
So how was a conference versus any of the other things that the UX Research Collective was doing boost the mission or the profile of UX researchers? What was it about a conference that you thought would make a difference?
Well, for starters, there's, you know, meetups, for example, attract a certain kind of audience. And in general, what we found is that us trying to get more, or we should, it makes sense for us to have more entry-level content at our meetups, because that tends to be the kind of folks who like to come out to those events. And there's, you know, depending on what kind of thing you're producing, there's obviously different kinds of community that you're, or segments of the community that you're going to end up engaging. And the conference is the one thing that we do that is really targeted towards and brings out more senior researchers and research leaders from, you know, not just in Toronto, but more broadly as well. So it's not, like I'd say, a very small percentage of senior researchers come out to our meetups, but I'd say even the majority of our attendees for the conference are at that level or more advanced. So it's another, a different part of the community that we don't usually get to serve the rest of the year that we have the opportunity to connect with.
That makes sense. When you were starting to form the idea of doing a conference, you know, being a community of research practitioners, did you actually go about validating the need for a conference? And if you did, how did you do that? What kind of tools and methods would you approach to validating a conference?
I feel like I'm going to sound like a bad researcher and a bad like business person, but
you're busted. We got it.
Yeah, you guys caught me. Shit, I shouldn't have done this. But no. So I think the most accurate answer is I think we had good reason to believe that there was a there, and if we worked really hard and did our best, we wouldn't lose our shirts, and that was kind of like the goal. So, or at least for last year's. And that's kind of how it really played out. And for example, one piece of evidence that this might work was our meetups were growing month over month. So the first meetup we had was like 30 people. I gave away half the tickets for free. This is when I was like still on my own sort of thing. You know, you had to like ask like my cousin to come, you know, so it didn't look like embarrassingly small. And by the end of that calendar year, there was like, We had like 100 people at a meetup at Wattpad, and that was like wild to see considering where we had been just like 5-6 months earlier. So I think that was like a good sign for us that there was an opportunity there. The fact that there wasn't a research conference yet, or at least not one that there's one out in Vancouver that's pretty small that does a decent job. There just really wasn't that space yet. So, you know, it was kind of like a not so educated guess, let's say.
While you were framing that up, was it always in your mind going to be a conference, or were you thinking about other ways you might solve that problem or address that need?
I think that we were always interested in the conference part. And it's not just because it gives you the opportunity to, like, you know, bring in some interesting speakers, do some more advanced content. That's all great. But there's also like this piece of like connecting community. And if you do it right, I think that the conferences have this incredible opportunity for like people to connect with others from other places who are at similar places in their career that are facing similar challenges and trying to tackle them in different ways. And I think that's like a really special thing to be able to provide to folks. And it's a pretty explicit goal of us, especially for this year, is like to look at how we help people meet each other. So one of the ideas that we had that we're going to be doing this year in lieu of that goal was Maggie's team. She runs the experience team at UXR Collective. And one of the things that they did, so we were bad with research before we did our first conference. We were much better this time around. We spent a good amount of time interviewing sponsors from last year, speakers from last year, guests, people who've gone to other conferences and learning about like what things went well and what have been some challenges for them. And so one of the most common things that you'll hear is that it's like really hard to meet people at a conference because it's very intimidating. The size is enormous. You're sometimes dealing with multiple thousands of people. It kind of feels awkward to just go up to somebody you don't know. And so for us, one of the ways we try and solve and address that problem is this year we're going to have 2 days of talks. The second day we'll all be in one place, which is at Roy Thomson Hall, and one track of talks. But the first day we're actually splitting out across a couple of different venues in the city, and people get to choose which track they want to go, and it sort of corresponds to where they're at in their career. So we're having one of the tracks is called Breaking Into Research. There's Advancing Your Practice, something for research leads and managers, designers that do research, and research operations. And so people will be able to sort of pick a track that most interests them, and then sort of like get to spend time with a smaller number of people, each of which is kind of at that same spot that they're at. So it's be a little bit easier for them to make a few new friends. And we're also baking in a lot more like chill time during the first day for people to like actually facilitate those conversations.
When you've got ideas like that in terms of how you want to run the conference and what kind of experience elements you want to include, are you able to prototype those out in any way, or does it just go from idea to production, so to speak?
That's a really good question.
Thanks.
So I'm probably not the ideal person to answer that because that's all on Maggie's team. But I think probably the best answer is there are ways that we learn things that are not necessarily prototyping up something in particular that reflects what it is that we want to produce. But just like with research, you're looking for different kinds of evidence that can help guide the development of something. So, you know, for example, Danielle's team that focuses all on the comms pieces, and you know, she might look at what are the sort of articles on our Medium blog that are doing really well, or what are the different interesting social media posts that have been really engaging with the community. So, like those kinds of things are really helpful to inform the experience team that Maggie runs around, like what are some of the things that we should develop. And For that particular piece, there was a good amount of like generative, or I guess there's a good amount of generative and evaluative research for interviewing people who had recently been to conferences to figure out sort of like at least directionally where we might be able to go in order to address that need of like wanting to connect.
You mentioned that you're trying to run these events as kind of a break-even operation and that a lot of it is focusing on the community, but obviously putting on a conference is also a business undertaking in a sense. How much sort of upfront validation or planning did you do around whether there really was a viable business model for the event that you were trying to create?
You know, again, like it's maybe irresponsible, but this is not the first time I've done financially irresponsible things, at least personally. You know, like, so first and foremost, it feels like there's a real there. And there's a lot of passive signals that we get throughout the year that tells us like there's a there. And it's really hard to like, so if you look at something like a conference, it's a massive undertaking. Like, how would you even validate conceptually whether or not you should put on a conference? Like, you can't prototype out the conference and like show it to people in a one-on-one interview setting. You can't focus group that. You can't send out surveys. They just won't be useful. So you kind of have to rely on other signals, other forms of evidence. So for example, one of the things we did after the conference was like I focus on sponsorship and partnerships. And so after last year's conference, I scheduled a 30-minute call with each of our last year's sponsors. And I sent them a little survey, so the anonymous survey and a call. And it was a great chance for me to hear like whether or not these folks who had contributed a disproportionate amount of money in order to have a particular kind of experience, whether or not we sort of met the bar for quality for them and for whether or not it was worth it. And that was extremely informative for whether or not it would be a good idea to continue down this path and continue trying to grow. Same with the folks on the experience team, you know, like Maggie sort of like commissioned some research projects. And that's kind of like the best that you can do with a kind of event like this. Luckily, there's not a lot of mystery in terms of what a conference is. It's not quite like a brand new kind of product that's disrupting a market. Conferences are conferences. They're pretty well understood. Now, of course, there's like unique elements to each one. But, you know, in terms of like whether or not there's a demand there, I think you can get a good feel for from other signals. And so everything kind of pointed to that direction, I guess. Still a risk, but hopefully one that works out.
So you've touched on some of the major functional aspects of a conference. Can you just list out what they are? You touched on the experience. You've got an experience team. You've got partnerships. What are the other major components of a conference that you need to plan for?
So the first one, so the one that I focus on is sponsorships and partnerships. So that's one piece of it. The most important one is for sure the experience team. So that's was like built in and created and led by Maggie. And so that involves everything from like speakers, attendees, even it touches on the sponsors as well in terms of like what are people's journeys into coming to our event and like what are the kinds of experiences we want them to have. Basically like creating user journeys for everyone who's going to touch the conference in any way. And then working from that to trying to craft an experience that really fits what they're looking for and what their goals are. The third one is there's the communications team. So they focus on like everything from emails, blog, social media. They help craft a lot. I collaborate with them a lot. So for example, whenever we announce a new sponsor, that's a collaboration between the sponsorship team and them. And that's led by Danielle Klein. And then there's the design team. So they build and maintain and design all of our assets. So like our website, our sponsorship package, our promotional materials, all that kind of stuff. And so that's a team of about four. And then the last one is around like inclusion, ethics, codes of conduct, that kind of stuff. And Stefan Jovanovic runs that. And the design team is led by Tammy Lee.
So it sounds like there's a lot of interlocking parts. Is there, especially before you were planning the first conference or in the process of planning that first conference, was there a distinct sequence? Like you knew you had to lock in X amount of sponsors before you could really consider taking the next step, or you kind of did everything at once?
Yeah. So in general, you can't do anything. So the first thing, first and foremost, as Maggie will tell you, is like, you can't do anything without a venue. So you got to have that. And we had just enough money left over from last year's conference to put a deposit on Roy Thompson Hall. Once you have that, then you're rolling. So, you know, for me, I can speak in more detail about the sponsorship side, but like, there's a lot of work that goes in before you even touch base with your first sponsor. So you got to understand that like if you're going to be selling a sponsorship, it's not like selling a regular product, right? You know, if you want to go buy a pair of shoes, right? You got to go into the store, you can look online, you can look at the shoes, you can look at other people wearing the shoes, you can go into the store, you can touch the shoes, you can try them on, you buy them. If you don't like them, you can take them back. None of that opportunity to experience those like a sponsorship opportunity exists for something like a conference. Like you don't get to see the product before you buy it. You don't get a refund if you don't like it. So you have to do a lot of things that show that you're serious about treating other people's money with respect in order to make it work. And so subtle things like, is your sponsorship package like well-designed visually? That makes a huge difference. Are you communicating in a way with these potential sponsors that like shows that professionalism and like kindness and whatever it is that makes them feel like, yeah, you're on top of your shit, right? You make it easy for them to say yes, right? You make it easy. You always have the information they need at your fingertips. So you're not like when they ask, well, who are the kinds of people that come to your conference? You don't like say, let me get back to you on that and respond in 3 weeks. That doesn't sort of communicate that level of seriousness. And so like that's that kind of stuff. All has to happen. You have to have that stuff planned out before you start your first outreach. And so like that took me about and my team about a month and a half to figure out like what that all was going to look like. And it's similar with the experience team too. They have like probably the most complicated obviously thing to plan. So, you know, starts with the venue, but then it starts with a lot of brainstorming and a lot of like, what do these user journeys look like into our conference? How might we explore certain pieces of them and create something that's like unique and special that makes people feel at home and makes people excited to learn. So yeah, it's a lot more planning up front than you might expect, I'd say.
So you're running the second iteration of this conference in this upcoming summer. After the 2018 conference, how much of a playbook did you have for planning and running the conference itself?
Very little. So one thing to say is, like, I think probably, like, for that first conference, from when we decided to do it to the actual date of the conference was 11 weeks.
Jeez.
And so that was not smart.
Seems irresponsible, yes.
It's like a theme in my life. It was really, really brief. And so, like, everything we were doing, we were just, like, sprinting the whole time. And just, like, figuring it out as it went. And because we just had too much on the line to kind of screw it up. We only broke even about 3 or 4 weeks out from the event. So it was, like, a pretty stressful time. And then for this year, we decided, you know, to go a lot bigger. So when you go bigger, the complexity increases disproportionately. So we didn't really have to do a lot of that same, like, journey mapping necessarily for, I mean, we did some of it, but not to the same detail that we have to do it for this year. Right. We only had 1 day of track, of talks, and really one track. This year we have 2 days, and one of those days has 5 tracks. So how do these things interlock? How do we make sure that no matter which track you go to, you're going to have a great experience? So a lot of this has been figured out from scratch. And I think that probably next year the following year after this one, we'll probably stick with, like, the same size. And I think at that point we'll have a pretty clear playbook, but pretty much everything has kind of been generated from scratch. The amount of process that goes into this stuff is kind of staggering, I think. It's like one of those things that I just assumed that was not a thing when we started, and I've proven to be extremely wrong about that.
So of all the prep work that's gone into certainly last year's conference and this upcoming one as well, what turns out to be the hardest aspect of actually putting a conference together?
Well, what do you think it would be, if you were to take a guess?
I mean, it's a good question. I feel like if I were planning a conference, the thing that would freak me out the most would certainly be trying to lock in speakers.
Yeah. So that one actually was not too, so again, there was a lot of prep work in advance. So, and for that one, I think, Maggie and Danielle collaborated on this, but, like, what is how are we going to even, like, evaluate potential speakers? How are we going to reach out to them? And we ended up with, like, 150 speaker applications over that, actually.
Wow.
Which was pretty wild. So that one ended up being okay. It was just a ton of work to actually evaluate all the talks, you know, because we wanted everyone to have multiple eyeballs on it, have a standard rubric for, you know, evaluating each one, that kind of thing. The hardest one in terms of effort is probably the journey mapping exercises and figuring out how you're going to actually address things like, you know, when somebody shows up, are they going to know where to go? Are they going to know where the washrooms are? Are they going to know how to engage in a conversation? Can we help facilitate people who are, like, extroverted talking to other folks who are extroverted and make, you know, people who are a little bit more introverted feel comfortable and can engage in a way that feels safe for them? That stuff is, like, really, really complex. And from, like, a puzzle point of view, it's probably the hardest. From an effort point of view, it's probably, like, the ticket sales. That's just, like, a lot of manual hard work. Because the good news is we've got, I think, a pretty great lineup of speakers. But lots of people, like, wait to buy stuff, need a little, like, a nudge or a reminder. Some folks, like, you know, they just weren't aware. So you got to do a lot of outreach to just say, like, hey, here's what we're putting on. Here's why you might want to come. Are you interested? And then responding to hundreds of those emails over the course of, like, the planning of that conference.
So you talk about all these elements of the experience, from the bathroom signs through the speakers through, you know, what's being served for lunch. How much are you considering all of those elements coming together, and how much can really design that and ensure that there is a cohesive experience there versus the conference just being a result of kind of the sum of its parts?
Yeah. First of all, something will always go wrong. That's just, like, so a couple of funny things from last year that I'll share. Somehow, and I don't know how, we lost all of the lanyards for people that start with the letter E as their last name. They disappeared. We have no idea where they went. Like, we knew where they were the night before. We were, as far as we knew, we brought them to the venue. But they just were never there. So we had to, like, for everyone whose last name started with the letter E, we had to, like, write out their names on lanyards and just hope that they were the right person coming to the conference. You know, like, that kind of stuff happens. you know, there were a few, for example, there are a few speakers where we, you know, their slides got a little wonky and like, you know, that's just the way it goes. And so like, to some extent, there will always be a part of it that feels a bit disjointed, like a bit like a sum of its parts. But it's a huge focus for this whole thing has been from each of the people running their teams has been like, how do we build this like cohesive design experience that makes people feel welcome, makes people feel like they're in a good place to learn. So the hope is that for the most part, this feels like a well-tailored design experience. And luckily, like we have the right people taking on those challenges. So not me. And like, they're really, really good at it. So like the design team led by Tammy, they've got like, they're already trying, like spent a bunch of time at the venue being like, where are the places we're going to need wayfinding instruments, right? Signs of various kinds, like whatever it is. And what are those signs going to look like so that everybody will, no matter what direction they're coming from, will feel that they can navigate themselves to where they need to be. You know, when somebody shows up to the venue for the first time, like what does that first 5 minutes look like? Like there's a lot of effort being spent on Maggie's team figuring that out by folks like Jane and Emily. So we're hoping that it feels like a design experience at the very least. That's the goal. But there will inevitably be, and if you're trying to do any large event, there will inevitably be parts of it that just stick out a little bit because it's hard to anticipate everything.
Let's take a brief break for this episode's sponsor. This episode is sponsored by Linode. You can instantly deploy and manage an SSD server in the Linode cloud. Get a server running in seconds with your choice of Linux distro, resources, and node location. They offer dedicated CPU instances designed for consistent high-performance computing needs like video encoding, game servers, and busy app servers. Linode is offering $20 in credit to all new customers. You can build it all on Linode, distributed applications, hosted services, websites, and CI or CD environments. Linode features native SSD storage, a 40 gigabit network, and industry-leading processors, and you can pick from any of their 9 worldwide data centers. Deploying and maintaining your infrastructure is simple and cost-effective. You only ever pay for what you use with hourly billing across all plans and add-on services. You can claim your $20 credit when you visit linode.com/framework and use the promo code framework2019. That code is all one word. That's linode.com/framework with promo code framework2019. And we're back. So we've been talking about the sort of end-to-end experience and mostly focusing on the attendees of the conference. How much did you try to design the experience for the speakers who were participating in the conference?
110%. Is that allowed? Can I say
sure.
that?
Sure.
Yeah. No, that one gets just as much attention, maybe even more, as the speakers. As the attendees. And the other thing with them is expectations are different. I think it's important to note that like speakers do work. Like they put in work so that you can put on your conference. Like it completely blows our mind that there are conferences out there that make speakers buy tickets to speak at their conference. Like Epic and FITC and some of these other big ones. It's like crazy. You know, you're putting in all this effort. So like we want them to have a fully like they should feel like they're completely taken care of, and the only thing that they're worrying about is delivering an incredible talk and sharing their insights with the world. So whether it's like accommodations, whether it's travel, make sure that's covered. They have a little bit of spending money when they get to Canada, you know, because a lot of them will be coming from the U.S. and some elsewhere. So like that kind of stuff has to be like really, really well thought through. And the other thing is even not just from when they start their actual quote unquote conference experience, but also making sure they feel like they're in the loop the whole way through, right? So, you know, it's a big commitment for people to take time to develop their talk, to even share the good news among their channels, like they're emotionally invested in it. They're, you know, they're helping to promote your conference and whatnot. And so it's important to make sure that they understand like what the current developments are, like what is the plan for getting me to where I need to go kind of thing. And so that one's like really, really important. And especially because generally speaking, the speakers are going to be really smart, really talented, really driven people who don't necessarily have a lot of time to like worry about whether or not you're doing your job. So you have to be super proactive. So on the experience team, they're going to do things like regular check-in updates, telling speakers like, here's what we still need from you. Here's when we need to buy. And by the way, here are the developments of the conference. So that's something that happens as well.
And it's the quality of the speakers that's ultimately going to dictate how successful your event is. So, you know, and a lot of these people, you know, might not have a ton of professional speaking experience in their past. So how do you support the development of their content along the way?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the folks who we put together a content advisory committee. So it wasn't just the five co-founders that decided who got to speak. We had about 20 people or so involved in evaluating submissions. And one of them was, her name is Tara. She was involved in Radical Research Summit in Vancouver, which is a conference, a little research conference, about, I think, 150, 250 people. And one of the things that they did that was really interesting was they do these check-ins with speakers, like in coaching sessions, even during the development of their talk. So like a month, 2 months out, they'll have check-ins. And it has a couple of good effects. So one is, by definition, the sort of speaker has to have their content ready earlier than a lot of them, for better or for worse, generally develop their content. So you're less likely to get last minute changes to slides, which happened to us last year and was partially responsible for some of the, or a couple snafus. And then the other thing was it gives people a chance to practice, get some external feedback. So we have sort of funds available for folks who want like coaching lessons or anything like that. And then we also have our check-ins with them, where someone from the content advisory committee will spend some time with them, talk with them through some parts of their talk, give a little bit of feedback, that kind of thing. It's super important, obviously. At the end of the day, like this, the takeaways are in the content that these people provide. And it's not just about us wanting to make sure that people get to learn as much as they can. It's also like we want speakers to walk away from this experience feeling amazing about what they did for the community. So it works both ways, both for speakers and the attendees.
As you're building up to this year's conference, do you think having that name brand recognition after the success of last year's conference is helping, or what kind of expectations do you think you're running up against now?
Well, it can't hurt. I'm certain of that. compared to last year, there's no name recognition of anything, so we're starting from zero. Things were a lot easier this year in many ways. It's harder because we're going bigger, but for example, on the sponsorship side, I begged, borrowed, and didn't steal, but begged and borrowed for a lot of people's time and to contribute in some way to the conference that we could put it on, have the right number of sponsorship dollars. This year, like we've done about 7.5 times the amount of sponsorship money, and the vast majority of that, the people of companies' willingness to commit that kind of money was seeing like, hey, here's what we did last year, here's what we're planning for this year. We did a good job last year. You know, we're going to do a good job this year. So that was like enormous. And especially for people who, the best kind of sponsors we had were from people who were at the conference or one of their employees were at the conference. So there's a couple of American companies that sponsored our conference in a major way that we're going to be announcing soon that we're very, very excited about. And the reason that they got involved was someone from their team was at our conference, learned a ton. It improved the business. Their business and their research function. People were really excited and had a good time, and so they want to get involved now. And so, like, if anybody is out there trying to think about building a conference, it's not a bad idea to start small and try and get something out there in a short amount of time to get you that validation, to show that you're serious about putting on a great show, and then trying to go bigger from there. So at least from the sponsorship point of view and from ticket sales point of view, it's like a huge, huge help. Before we even announced any speakers, we had people buying tickets from like Seattle, Berlin, you know, Manchester, New York, right? Like before we really had anything other than like our, you know, we set up our website and just said, this thing's coming and here's where it's going to be. Here are the dates. Hope you can make it. And that was it. And we had lots of people buying tickets just off of that. So that's obviously super helpful.
Can you elaborate on that a bit more? Just what that like release cycle is? For the conference, you know, you go from landing page to the day of the conference itself. How does the kind of promotion build up towards the conference?
This is actually something that I don't think we've like totally nailed yet. Like there is a real art to like ticket prices and how announcements happen and all that kind of stuff. And I think we're still figuring it out for us in terms of what'll be ideal, but. So the first thing is like, you know, once we lock down Roy Thomson Hall, then we are in a place where we can like announce that we're doing another conference. Like everything really stems from the venue. Because, you know, the deposit you put on the venue, the venue you choose really communicates a lot about what your intentions are for the entire event, right? So for us, one of the reasons we really cared about, really were happy with Roy Thomson Hall was that you know, the Toronto Symphony Orchestra fucking plays there. Like, you know, heads of state speak there. Like, and that's kind of speaks to like our ambition for where we'd like to see research get to. Having a seat at the table, you know, being treated with a level of seriousness, understanding the value that it brings to a business, to a product function. And so that was really important to us. And so that gets inherently communicated. So once you have that, you can build out a website and say, this thing is coming. It's like, it's happening. Here's the dates. It's locked down. And then you can start selling like your earliest tickets, right? So this is kind of like, I think Fluxible calls them the leap of faith tickets, where they don't even have anything yet. But if you're pretty sure you're going to come either way, you can save like a good amount of money. Then at some point, you know, you're going to want to sort of basically raise those prices a little bit. And usually you're going to try and make that coincide with the announcement of your first speakers. Basically, your prices should go up in inverse correlation with the amount of information you put out about your conference. The more speakers you announce, the more information you put, sorry, they should correlate, not inversely, regularly correlate. The amount of speakers information you put out should mean like now people have more information to make a smart decision and to know that this is going to be great. They're taking less of a risk. So you should expect that like people are being more comfortable paying a higher price. And early on, like the money that you get from the earliest tickets is super, super helpful. It lets you fund some of your early development of your conference. So it's worthwhile to give them a discount. So basically, over time, prices go up, more information gets released, and that's kind of like the cycle.
So you talked about this year's conference having multiple tracks and trying to address different roles that are adjacent to research or that interact with research in different ways. And my supposition is that came out of the first year where, you know, probably a bunch of different folks showed up that you weren't necessarily expecting. Given that you do have this broader focus this year, do you pitch slightly differently to like different groups of potential attendees?
Yeah, that's a great question. So some of the things, getting back to some things we didn't nail quite, totally hit off the bat last year. I'm mixing a whole bunch of metaphors there. That's excellent. So one of the common pieces of criticism that we got that we really wanted to improve upon was, on the whole, people had a great time and they learned some stuff and that's wonderful. But there wasn't a ton of content that felt like it was just right for them. And that was really interesting, an interesting takeaway. And it was also probably generalizable to conferences more broadly, but it was something that we heard from our audience. And especially for some of the folks that a little bit more advanced in their careers. And I thought that was really interesting because, you know, there's not a lot of research conferences out there. And if people are still looking for more tailored content, how do we solve that problem? And so that's where sort of the idea for these tracks came out. And we just looked at like, who were the people that came last year? Like, what were the meaningful groups of folks? What were the different sort of like stages of careers that they were referencing? Or that they were at for themselves, and how might we think about positioning these different tracks like in a way that's like has meaningful distinctions, right? So the five that we came up with were basically there's breaking into research, so someone who has not yet gotten their first research job and that's what they're looking for, or they're looking to develop the skills to get that first research job. There's people who've been doing the role for a while and trying to get better at it. People who are now in positions where they're leading or managing a team. And there's really not a lot of people out there. There's not a lot of research managers and research leads, but there's more than there's ever been before. And this is becoming more and more of an important position to understand. And people who are managing researchers face unique challenges, like executives telling them, wondering why they are employed at the company that they've been hired by. That happened to me a couple of times. That was interesting. You know, stakeholders or people in the product function not having any interest in collaborating with research. Like, those are problems that I think that people in design or product management or engineering just don't have as managers. Like, so there's some unique challenges there, and we want to be able to speak to that. There's a lot of folks who are in design where doing research is part of their design work, and they have some unique challenges where they're both developing solutions and understanding problems, and, you know, they're measured based on the stuff they produce. So, like, there's an incentive not necessarily to understand the problem as deeply if they have tight timelines. So there's unique challenges there. And then, of course, the research ops, which is kind of, it's not like a new thing, but it's a very fast growing community of specialists who are all about making sure that research runs smoothly in organizations. So we've got basically the leader of the research ops world, Kate Towsey, coming in from Australia to run a little workshop there. So like that, those are the different tracks. I think they represent meaningfully different ways of going about the research function. And that way we can actually deliver more tailored content that speaks to those unique challenges that you face. And on the second day, we really try to choose talks that can inspire and help improve the practice of like everyone in the audience, no matter who you are.
So a conference seems like the type of thing where once it's launched and it's out in the wild, there's kind of no putting the genie back in the bottle there.
No.
was there a kill switch built into this where, you know, you would call it off, you know, if people weren't buying tickets, or is it just like once you've announced it, it's happening?
Oh, I mean, like, I'm sure that there are some catastrophic something or other could happen, and that would be the case. Like, if a meteor hit Roy Thomson Hall, I think we'd be in a really tough position. It's kind of not designed to have that kill switch. And if you do decide to create a kill switch and flip it, like, you're going to be in a world of hurt, right? Sponsors are going to want their money back, but you might have already paid for a lot of things. And those vendors are not going to return, you know, they're not going to be like, what, your conference, I guess it's not happening, so all this work we did for you, I guess, you know, maybe we just return on the funds. They're not going to do that. So, you know, you're kind of in a bit of a pickle. And for us, the good news is if you're doing an event, you can pretty much, assuming that you were in the right, your ambitions were within the realm of reality, you can pretty much guarantee that you won't lose your shirt if you try really, really hard to like sell tickets. I mean, that's kind of like our saving grace. Like, if no matter what happens, if we try really, really hard and we reach out to like 100 people a week, you know, like to come and tell them about the good news about the conference, like we shouldn't be in a position where we're going to like lose our shirts and we have to call it off, right? And so like knowing that you have a lever to pull of just like hard work and sweat equity at any given time to help make it happen, like that's an okay position to be in. I mean, ultimately, like with any sort of entrepreneurial endeavor, ideally, so you set yourself up in a way so that you always have a lever to pull to like make ends meet. And, you know, if you're putting on a conference, you can always try harder to sell tickets and reach out to more people. If you're making like tchotchkes, you can always go to more trade shows. You can always like call more people. You can always go door to door. Like if you really want to make it. And like, that's a thing that I think a lot of people don't quite fully grasp. It's like, there's always the effort lever. And that 9 times out of 10 will get you there unless you do something really stupid. Like, I don't think Fyre Festival could have pulled it off by leveraging the effort lever more. I think they, they're in a class all their own, right?
Yeah.
So I think we're all certainly fairly familiar with like the function of UX research and how that interlocks with metrics around, you know, like product development and the things that, you know, we do as our jobs. How do you formulate the metrics for a conference? What does that look like?
I do mean like goals?
I mean, maybe goals is a better way of stating it. Yeah.
Our ultimate goal is to like not, is to not fail in the sense of like to put on a great event. To not lose our money, right? Like to do a good job. And that's kind of like the only real like hard goal we have. Like that's a line we can't afford to not cross. Other than that, it's like, it's really just about putting on an amazing event, right? And that's kind of why, you know, whether it's myself, it's Danielle, it's Tammy, it's Maggie, it's Stefan, like we all put a ton of time and love and passion into it. And at the end of the day, like, you know, we hope that it ends up being like a, you know, allows us to do a lot of fun, crazy projects for the rest of the year. But more importantly, that everybody walks away from it having had a great experience, having made a new friend, having learned some important things. Like, we have like surveys we'll send out after the conference, and that'll help let us know how well we did. But it's hard to say like we have a clear metric other than like, you know, making sure this thing is sustainable, I guess.
Maybe a good way to think about this is to actually flip the question around. I mean, you did mention sending out surveys and having chats with speakers and attendees and your sponsors. What does success look like for them? What kind of measurements are they making that, you know, they'll come back or they'll sponsor the event again?
Yeah, that's a great, I mean, I definitely can speak to the sponsor side of things. So there's basically four things we can And this, I think, is pretty widely applicable to any kind of event that's doing sponsors. There's four things that you can sell. So the first thing you can sell is if you've got people who are selling software or products to the community that you bring to the table. So in this case, research tools, right? So you can say this is an opportunity for you to develop leads or make sales. The second thing is recruiting. So people who are trying to find folks to fill research roles in their company. The third thing is brand awareness. So like just people being understanding the, you know, that this is a, this company X is a player in the research space and they really care about research. And when you think of research, you should think of company X. And then the last one is like thought leadership. So opportunities for them to show off like how serious they take their work, interesting things they've learned, that kind of stuff. Those are basically the four things that you can sell. And before you take any sponsor's money, you have like a fiduciary obligation to understand what their goals are, right? So you should have like a pretty explicit conversation with them around like what success looks like for them, which of these four or multiple of those levers they're trying to pull for themselves, and then work with them to find creative ways to like meet those goals. So yeah, you can set up a booth and like hand out flyers, but like what could you do that's like extra special? Let's say you are like an e-commerce company that's very large and headquartered in Ottawa. Like, could you bring maybe some people using your e-commerce software to show off all the cool things that they make and how using your software makes their life so much easier to produce all these cool things? Like, that's a really interesting way to tell their story. And if you really care about, you know, brand awareness in the research community and you really care about recruiting, that helps do something more than just having a booth will. So those are like the four kinds of goals for the speakers. On the attendee side, I think the two things that really stick out is like, you know, did I learn things? Or three things, I guess. Did I learn important things that make me better? Did I meet new people that I really like? And did I have a great time? And so that also came out of the research that we did after last year's conference as well, right? So there's, for example, I think we did a decent job on learning, on helping people have a good time and learn things, but we could have done a much better job on helping people make new connections. That's an area where we didn't do as great of a job. And then on the speaker side, like, you know, they want to be well taken care of. They want to look like rock stars. They want to have a great experience. They want to meet other leaders. That's kind of pretty much it for those three categories of people. That's what they're looking for. And your job is to like put in every effort, try and think through every detail to make sure that their goals are met. And if you do that, then there's a good chance you'll meet your goals for the conference yourself.
So here's a bit of an open-ended question for you, but you've kind of touched on this in various answers so far. How does a conference scale when you're thinking of what the 2018 version of this conference was compared to the 2019, beyond just more attendees, where are you looking to scale this?
Oh, I'm not sure we're looking to scale beyond what we've got this year. This is like a special kind of like pain to put yourself in where it's all of your own making. And like, once you start on that journey, you can't get off kind of thing. I mean, there's a lot of love that goes into it, and like we're really proud of the work that we do, and there's a lot of passion and whatnot, and that's wonderful. But like, there's also a lot of sacrifice, and like this isn't like a massive, like, you know, this isn't a very like financially, you know, enticing endeavor, let's say. Yeah, we invest sweat equity and we get back love, right? Like that's kind of the real calculus that gets done here. So I don't know, like, I think that the way you think about a problem like that, let's say we kept it the same for the following year, and then the year after that we decide we wanted to do more. Like, I think the important thing is to sort of not just to like grow in size, but to reconsider what it means to put on an event, right? So one example, so for the first one we did, it's kind of like it's one day, one set of tracks, you know, everybody gets the same experience kind of thing. That's just the way it is. For this year, we have 2 days, different tracks focused on different kinds of researchers or people who do different kinds of research. We're trying to facilitate more connections, more friendships, more learnings, that kind of stuff. For a future year, you might think of like, okay, well, how do we go beyond like a 2-day conference that's really tailored to each individual's interest to something that's like maybe more of like a research festival, or maybe it's like a week-long product, you know, or UX or research or whatever it is. Experience where you have different kinds of things. So maybe instead of just having a single day of talks and then a day of track talks and whatnot. You could have, you know, days of mingling, and you could have like special social events and stuff like that beyond what you might just regularly expect for a 1 or 2 day conference. That's how you might think about it. I'm not sure if like that's necessarily an interest of ours. Like it's tough enough trying to put on a 2 day event that really, again, feels like it's got a great experience for everyone. But, you know, we'll see. You know, like at some point, one of the things that we're thinking a lot about is like, how do we make this sustainable, right? Like right now, we're each one of the five co-founders especially is putting in a lot of extra hours on top of their regular jobs. And so for us to be able to continue to do this in 4 years, 5 years, 10 years, you know, we need to find a better model where people start having families, they have kids, whatever it is. And that level of time commitment is just not going to be feasible. So part of us right now is there's some experimentation in terms of like what that might look like so that we can have that kind of sustainability and longevity. And depending on how well this conference goes, like we might have that next year, we might have that in 2 years or 5 years, we don't know yet. By the way, are you guys coming or what? Like, I've checked the attendee list. So you guys haven't got your tickets yet. Well, you can go to uxrconference.com.
June 6th to 7th, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Roy Thompson Hall, buy tickets.
That's the one. All right.
All right. Thanks, Rob. We got the plug in there.
Appreciate it. I'll make a discount code for you guys. We'll just call it like Framework UXR. I'll make that. So we'll give you, any of your listeners want to come and get 10% off.
Oh, perfect. Sweet. There we go. You heard it here. Heard it here first.
So just to I guess, kind of wrap this up and maybe take a bit of a backward look, what are the biggest learnings from actually planning this conference? And I think, you know, successfully running it for the first time last year, what are those learnings or takeaways that you could have in no way foreseen? What was surprising to you?
I think that I'll tell you the biggest one. It was like foreseeable, but I didn't quite realize how important this it was. The only thing that makes this work is we have like wildly talented people leading the critical functions for the conference that are like specialized in being wildly talented in their role. So whether it's, you know, Tammy who runs design and the building of the website and all the assets and that kind of stuff, whether it's Danielle who runs communications, Maggie who builds out the actual experiences for attendees, speakers, and sponsors, like each one of them is incredibly talented. Like, you know, like I would, in another life, I'd love to work with them on like another company that's trying to change the world in some way. Like that's how good they are. And without that, you're really going to struggle. So if you're trying to put it on yourself, or maybe there's two of you, maybe there's more, but you're not all like that committed or not, maybe still early in your career and not at the level where you can fully execute on things that you need to do. Like it's just not going to work. There's so much effort and care and thoughtfulness that goes into each one. And the way we're able to get it done is, you know, we have like full trust in each other in terms of being able to like do everything the right way and know that things are going to get done and get done in a timely way. That allows us to like take a leap to like a Roy Thompson Hall. Otherwise, it'd be really, really tough. There's other things that we didn't know about. Like we didn't know that we needed to like find lanyards with the letter E. That was an important learning.
I could have told you that one.
You could have told me. Yeah. Yeah. I should have asked.
Have one for every letter of the alphabet. That's.
Yeah. Well, we thought that like, you know, there's probably 5% of people weren't going to show up. And we took a gamble. We thought people with the letter E wouldn't show up.
They were the five. Okay. Yeah.
You know, like, I don't think we quite realized that like, because there's so many moving parts, like, you know, things are inevitably going to go wrong. And just make sure you have people who have the mental capacity on the day of to like handle it and roll with it. Like our comfort monitor wasn't working in the morning of the event. That, you know, pissed off some speakers. That sucked. You know, that's stuff like that's going to happen. But ultimately, I think if you're driven by like sort of purpose, right, of something that other people can buy into, I think you have a really good shot, right? So like our mission to sort of connect and grow the research community in Toronto and beyond is something that a lot of other people have heard and seen and bought into. And so, you know, we've been like incredibly blessed to have people out there sharing the good news about the conference for us. And like that only happens if other people believe what you're doing is the right thing and believe in you and want to see you succeed. So it's very much a blessing to have that, and something that I definitely recommend. Like if you're going to take on this amount of work, if you're going to try and put something like this on, make sure you have some champions in your corner who really love you, who really care about you, and who want to see you succeed. Like, that's another thing. And so we're lucky to have that right now.
Well, on that note, as former attendees, both of us, and future attendees, you know, we're looking forward to the June 6th, 7th Strive conference coming up from UX Research TO. I just want to give a big thanks to Alec for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And a thank you for listening. If you're interested in learning more about this or attending yourself, you know, you can go to uxresearchto.com. Tickets are available there.
Framework is part of the Spec Network. That's a podcast network built to help designers and developers level up. You can find more shows like Framework over at spec.fm. And thanks to Drew Looper, who edits and helps to produce the show.
If you enjoyed this episode of Framework, help more listeners find the show by leaving a review or rating on iTunes, or recommend this podcast to a friend or a family member or anybody. And if you'd like to hear somebody else's product story on Framework or tell your own, we'd love to hear from you. And our contact details and Twitter handles are all on our website, framework.is. See you next time.